RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Telluretic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/N365Copilot.
Kraft mac and cheese is better than 90s hip-hop. We'll remind you of your childhood without making you feel incredibly old. Kraft mac and cheese, best thing ever.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we're going to be talking with Nate Grace, the chief engineer of Prime Archery, and he's going to break down some changes that have recently happened over the last couple years with Prime bows. Now, if you were to look at a Prime bow a couple years ago, you would automatically know what bow that is, right? They had the quad cam design, two cams up top, two cams on the bottom, and the reason why they had that, you'll hear about today. But there was a change that was coming. And so, and there were some balancing issues, and there was some stability issues that they really couldn't nail down. So they decided to go to this new core cam design system. And that means that now there's only one cam up top and one cam on the bottom, and that just changed. I mean, when you look at a product, any product, car, truck, a house, I don't know, you can tell the brand of it, right? And by taking the four cams away and replacing it with two, you're changing the brand image. And so there's a whole discussion on that, the whole discussion on the 150 different prototypes that they had to go through in order to get to what you see now with this new Revex, I'm not sure how you say it, but the new series that they have for 2023. So it's a really good conversation. And I like the fact that I'm able to talk to an actual engineer and not a marketing or a media guy, because I get to ask some pretty detailed questions to Nate that I don't feel like a marketing guy could answer. So it's a really good episode. I love seeing, and I mentioned in this podcast that one of my favorite bows of all time was the Prime Logic. And so I mentioned that to him, and he asked me a couple questions about it. But other than that, man, it's a really cool, informative, behind-the-curtains type podcast about Prime Archery. I hope you guys enjoy it. Now, before we get into today's episode, I am going to do some commercials. If you are looking for a saddle and you want to learn how to become a saddle hunter, go check out Tethered, tetherednation.com. And not only are you going to find everything you need, saddles, platforms, climbing sticks, saddle hunting accessories, you're going to find information to make you a better shed hunter. So go check out Tethered Saddles. I got two more actually. Hunt Stand. All right. These days I am on Hunt Stand. I am e-scouting. I am looking for access routes. I'm checking wind direction. I'm on that in my free time, which is very little these days, but when I'm maybe waiting for a practice to get over, or I'm waiting to pick my kids up from school, or I'm in the bathroom, pull up Hunt Stand and just use their functionality, right? So it's an awesome hunting app that just allows you to be more present in your hunting strategy all year round. Second, they have a new pro whitetail platform that everybody needs to go check out. So huntstand.com, go read up on all the functionality. Then we have the Tacticam 6.0. If you're looking to document your hunts, go check out Tacticam's new 6.0 action cam. It can be mounted to a bow. It can be mounted to a gun. And it has image stabilization and LCD screen, records in 4K. So it's the cat's pajamas of action cams, especially for those who want to document their hunts, take it home, show their kids, show their buddies what they saw and what they shot. And so go check out Tacticam.com. Awesome company. There's the commercials. Let's just cut the BS and get right into today's episode with Nate Grace of Prime Archery. All right, I'm on the phone now with Nate Grace from Prime Archery. Nate, how you doing, man?
Doing very good, thanks, man.
Yeah. All right, and so it's been a while. You've been on the podcast. I think I actually interviewed you at an ATA show, like pre-COVID ATA show. And that was the last time I spoke with you on this particular podcast.
Oh, really? There was something before COVID, huh?
Yeah, there was a world before COVID, absolutely.
There was a world, yeah. That's awesome.
So, I love the fact, and I'll just preface what we talked about before I hit the record button, and you said, "Hey, I'm not necessarily the marketing guy. I get paid to draw pictures and do some of the engineering work." And that's right. Why I love having guys like you on the podcast, because there's certain questions that I've asked in the past where a marketing guy or a media guy would just say, yeah, that's a great question, but I don't necessarily know the answer. That would be something for our engineer to answer. And so now that I have the engineer online here, I can ask those questions.
Well, you know, so when I get my back, you know, up against the wall, we just say, I'll have to ask the marketing guy.
So. So there's always someone to blame, right?
There's always somebody else, yeah.
Perfect. Okay, so for Prime Archery, I mean, back in the day, and this is, when I say back in the day, how many years now has it been since you guys have went from the dual cam to the single cam?
This is our second year.
Second year, okay.
Yep.
And so back as far back as 2 years ago, right, Prime was known for this look with two cams, two on the top, two on the bottom. And, right. I mean, you didn't even need to know what the brand name was. You could just look at the bow and say, that's a Prime, okay? So my first question to you is, what was the reaction that Prime got once it went from that dual cam to the single cam?
It was mixed for sure. Like you said, we knew kind of going into it, you know, part of our identity was the the quad cam or the parallel cam or the four cam, you know, whatever kind of people noticed about our bows. I mean, that was the biggest thing. There were some other differences, but obviously that stood out. So a lot of our guys that, you know, that really bought into Prime and were Prime guys, they were a little bit miffed of like, what? I thought this is, you know, this is who you guys are. But a lot of the other guys that were always kind of on the fence about us were kind of like, well, I can understand that now.
Yeah.
The parallel cam definitely had a kind of the appearance of being more complex. You know, there was a second string track, even though it was just a symmetrical track. I guess to me, it's not functioning in a lot of ways that people interact with the bow differently. You know, it's handling the forces and all that stuff on the axle differently. You know, that us engineers, you know, could see the difference, but for the average guy, we didn't really see that as being a big deal. But when we switched over, guys that were like, man, I can't deal with five strings or seven strings, you know, give me three and we'll call it good. Those kind of guys were definitely much more like, hey, maybe they were staying away from Prime because it just seemed a little bit too complex for them. And now they're, well, yeah, let me shoot the bow. You know, I could see myself owning something with three strings rather than five or more. So
gotcha.
It was kind of a mixed at the beginning. And a lot of guys thought, well, you know, with the parallel cam, we were supposed to be handling the loads on the axle differently than everybody else. And so now that you went to a three-track system, do you just not care about that? You know, that was kind of a natural question. And from, you know, from 20 yards out, the our three-track system looks very similar to everybody else, and the three-track systems out there all have cam lean issues and, you know, left and right issues and stuff like that. And so they just assume, well, you're going to have the same problem with yours. And, you know, once we were able to show them, hey, we're doing something different. We're actually traversing the cables into and underneath the string as you draw the string backwards, and that's how we're controlling the cam lean or the forces on the axle in a very, very similar way, or maybe not in the same way, but the end result is a very steady cam system like the parallel. So we're not giving up the cam lean control, or that horizontal knot travel is what we always referred to it as, any differently than the parallel cam. So we're not giving that up. We still believe that's as important as it was on day one when we launched Prime back in 2011.
Okay. So, all right. And so talk to us a little bit about that step. And so it sounds to me like just because it looks different doesn't mean it is different. And so, you know, you have still addressed the old issues with the new design of a single cam bow. Get into the details about what this new system is that you guys have incorporated and why it's so, I guess, and the technology behind it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it goes right back to the parallel cam. If you look at the axle that's going through, you know, the limb tips and through the cam, if you can kind of imagine that like a teeter-totter, you know, just like the one that you had in, oh, I don't know, it depends on how old you are. You know, they've gotten rid of a lot of the cool playground stuff. I don't know if teeter-totters are considered dangerous now. but there was this thing called a teeter-totter. And, you know, if the two kids that were on the end of this pole, basically, you know, sitting on it, if they were the same size, everything was kind of fun. The teeter-totter worked the way it was. But, you know, all it took is one big kid to get on the one side and one little kid, and the big kid always won out, right?
Right.
The little kid on the other side, he's, you know, lighter, half the weight or whatever, his feet were dangling in the air, and this isn't fair. So that's the same thing that's naturally happened with compound bows. It's the same thing that Alan, when he came up with a compound bow or the cam system, mentioned that. So the cool thing about the cam is you know, you get a leverage, the forces, And so the tension on the string goes up a little bit, and then it comes down. But on the cables, when you draw back, they just go up, 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 up. So there's really only two points in your draw force curve where those forces are equal. Outside of that, either the string's got more force or the cable's got more force. And so that cam is basically teeter-tottering, or that axle is teeter-tottering. So it's leaning left and then maybe right, you know, and obviously your string's attached to that. What's attached to your string is your knock. And so that knock travel, you know, when you pull that trigger and that release that string and it's pushing that knock forward, it's going to follow that cam lean and that axle tilting. So with the parallel cam, we just split the loads of the string and put the cable tracks right down the center. So everything was completely balanced. It didn't matter when you were drawing the bow back. All the forces were balanced all the time. With typical, you know, cams like I was talking about before, again, they're only balanced at two points of the draw cycle. Other than that, the string track, the main feature on the cam that everybody's looking at, is either tilting to the left or to the right. It's never straight up and down. So with this new three-track system, so last year it was the inline cam system, we updated it. It's called the core cam system this year. But what we're doing is it looks like a three-track system, similar to maybe Elite, Hoyt, some of the early Bowtech cams, and there's probably a few other guys out there that have it. I guess Hoyt has that now as a three-track as well. So if you were to start like a right-handed bow, and on your right side is a cable track, a second cable track, and then the string track, and that's what our cam looks like. As you draw back, those two cables will actually start to traverse, even though all three, the string, cable, and second cable tracks, are all side by side. Before you draw the string back, as you draw it back, those two cables actually start to move underneath each other and then underneath the string track, and that's how we're balancing that load as you draw the bow back. So it's basically cam lean. It doesn't mean anything. Does it matter? It does, because it's attached to the knock. And what we're trying to do with this, just like the parallel cam, was control that left and right knock travel, not just the vertical that everybody's been talking about for 30 years, but the left and right as well. Our core cam system on the new bows this year, and the inline cam, which had the inline cam system last year, basically have those traversing, those laterally traversing cable tracks in order to manage that.
Okay.
So
the buzzword
kind of big words and phrases. Sorry about that, but
yeah. So the buzzword here, though, is balance.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so not only is the balance in the knock travel up, down, left, right, but what about cam timing? Does this help with cam timing as well?
Not necessarily. No. I mean, one of the things that's unique about us is our grip isn't, we're not a pull from center system like Matthews is probably, you know, the biggest name in bows. Their top and bottom cams are symmetrical. So if you were to lay them over top of each other, they're basically the same thing. They just have cable tracks on different sides of the string track. With us, where we have the, we actually pull above center, and our top and bottom cam are actually different shaped, and that's more of a way to control that vertical knock travel. It's a slave system with the cables, so that our cables aren't going to the axle. There's no split yoke system or anything like that. So it's a slave system, so that helps. But with our unique bow design, how we control the vertical knock travel is by having that top cam being a different shape and being larger than the bottom cam.
Okay. And then that offsets the center pull.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. 'Cause the distance from the knot to the top axle is shorter on our bow than if the distance, from the knot to the bottom axle.
Right.
We're like a center pole system like PSC and Matthews. What they have is that distance is equal from the knot. So right. their cams are symmetrical top and bottom.
Okay. All right. What I always get interested in, especially with bow manufacturers, is the round table that everybody, you know, sits around, and they have the conversation of what are we going to do next year,
right.
and the year after that, and maybe even in some instances you guys already have planned out for the next 3 or 4 years or whatever.
Right.
When you guys were at that table and you were discussing, let's move away from the dual cam system and get into this single cam system, was there already engineering and design and, you know, like you said, all I do is draw pictures. Was there any CAD pictures and things like that that had to be brought to the table first? I mean, were you testing this the whole time? What did that conversation within Prime look like?
We're a little bit, we're probably different than the typical, we're not quite as linear as everybody else, at least what everybody thinks is a typical product development group, you know, so the other bow companies maybe or not, I don't know, I've never worked there, so I don't know what they are, but this, we're not quite as linear. When we started the parallel cam, we knew there were some negatives to it. Every system has a negative, you know, some of the negative was there was just more metal. The two string tracks were thinner and tend to vibrate a little bit more. We thought maybe over time we could figure out ways to mitigate that and reduce that vibration. And then there were, you know, some other things that came up through the years, guys wanting rotating mods. The modular system on that was, you know, a little bit hard because of the two tracks, stuff like that. So early on, we were already aware of the issues. We were already working on other cam systems that we would develop and see, you know, and test. Well, okay, so it solved this one problem, but now we have this new problem we don't like. And we also have another bow brand, Quest, that we've been doing. And so every year through that, we've developed all kinds of single, cam and a half, different twin cams, different slave systems through the years. So we got to be really... we were quite intimate with every cam system out there, the pluses and minuses, and then all the systems that we were building through the years. So it was kind of one of those things where, you know, we develop a lot of stuff that never gets to the market, and it just got to be one of those where we saw we couldn't manage the vibration and the noise from the parallel cam. So what do we got? So I guess what were the options?
Yeah.
So we went back to engineering and went through all of our notebooks and all of our prototypes and was kind of like, well, this system could work. We never really got it to work, but boy, if we could, it would be awesome. And so we just, okay, well, let's do what it takes to get it to work. And I think it took just about over a year to finalize it. But we, you know, some of those prototypes and some of that knowledge was built over 12 years of just constantly building things. Because there's lots of times we'll just come up with an idea, hey, this would be really cool to solve. Let's go build it, test it, for just the simple fact of does it work? Like, right. We don't even know. Because there's a lot of times when you build something, you're like, wow, yeah, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
So we have piles of that stuff, you know, just that we can always pull from. So sometimes, you know, some of those halfway figured out ideas, you know, we started 6 years ago, you know, put 2 years into it. It's just been sitting around since then. And then we'll have time to finish it or maybe a fresh take on it to be able to like, oh, that hurdle that we couldn't get past or that wall we couldn't get through, we figured out how to get through it.
Yeah. Is a lot of that product design prototype, is that all done in-house?
Yeah.
Okay.
Through the years, we've had a few, you know, we're not the only intelligent people in the world, so there's been ideas that have come from the outside. You know, people come up that are just passionate about it. They have a real day job. They love hunting. they prototype something and they're like, hey, what do you think? But yeah, 99% of it is all done.
And so the reason I ask that question is because what that allows you to do then, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it allows you to almost streamline and speed up the prototype process and the development process to where you have the ability to just create a whole bunch of stuff and test it on a shorter period of time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we spend a lot of time just on that process of how do you develop a CAM system? You know, when I first started developing CAMs, you know, however long ago that is now, 18 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever, you know, it would take us a couple days to develop a CAM. You know, that was good enough to get onto a bow and draw it back, shoot it, see what it does. But now we can do that in about 2 hours.
Wow.
We can go from an idea to a shootable product in about two hours. So we've spent a lot of time through the years just developing that process.
Okay.
Same with limbs, risers. You know, we that prototype process, like you said, the shorter that is, boy, I mean, it's not just having one good idea that you get through that cycle. It's having 5 or 6 a day that you can go through and bang out a whole bunch of stuff that you're like, hey, that one really sucked.
Yeah.
Don't do that again, but we learned something, so try this next one. Okay, that one sucked a little bit less. But just keep working at it. And you know, I think a lot of people might have the impression, at least, you know, maybe other places are like this, but at Prime we don't, where we just calculate everything on a board, and then the first time you make it, it works. That's not reality to us here.
Yeah. So this new core CAM system that you guys have introduced, was that just a bunch of prototyping and testing like you said, or was it more of a, hey man, we got this design, I think it's going to work. You tested it a couple times and it worked to your guys' liking.
Well, this one was kind of funny because my right-hand man for the longest time, his name is Scott Prater. He's a missionary now in Thailand.
Okay.
But him and I, you know, worked on everything up until about a year ago together through Prime's history. And I just remember arguing with him about this. And I was like, dude, we've tried that so many times. It's never worked. It won't work. He's like, no, I got one. Give me one more crack at it. I'm like, all right, do whatever you think. And then like 2 weeks later, he came back and he's like, I got it. I think this thing is going to work. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. It's performing better than I thought. But since then, you know, we had 30, 40 revisions since that point to get to the inline CAM system. And then from inline to the core CAM system, which they're fundamentally doing the same thing. They have traversing cable tracks that come underneath that string track. With the RevX bows and the core CAM system, we had over 150 prototypes, CAM prototypes that we developed. And that was more trying to go after very minute, knot travel, tunability kind of thing. So fundamentally, we already kind of figured all out how to keep that load balanced on the inline CAM. But just to work out knot travel with extreme, you know, FOC, short draw, all the different styles of rest that are out there, just trying to really make, is there a certain knock travel in a very minute kind of way? We're not talking, you know, a quarter inch or it's something that's even kind of hard to measure, but is there something there that would be more tuner friendly with all the variety of setups that are up on the market today? So we had over 150 revs just on the core CAM system from last year.
Okay. So then as you guys are, you know, fine-tuning the CAMs, does the rest of it kind of fall into place? And what I mean by that is all the other buzzwords that people talk about, like draw cycle or energy efficiency, which really is like hand shock and things like that.
Right.
Did that all fall into place, or did each one of those categories then have to be addressed as well?
No, you're right. Every one of those had to be addressed, and that's the primary reason. Not the primary, but yeah, I mean, of those 150, yeah, there was a big swap that was for subtle nut travel changes. Others were draw cycle. Others was efficiency. Yeah, it's trying to find that ratio between everything and the compromises that you're trying to make with the different features to get the total package correct.
Yeah. Okay. And so you got the cam system then doing what you want. You've reduced the knot travel like you've wanted. Go into the detail then about like and we can just talk about the RevX now, leaning into this new bow cycle. What were some of the issues then that needed to be addressed on the RevX as you're building this bow and as you're trying to make it ready for market?
Yeah, I mean, again, we spent most of the time on the cam this year, but yeah, the riser, the way the riser flexes, because every riser flexes their long skinny parts, so that's the other equation, the knock travel, but that, you know, vibration and noise come into play there as well. So there's a lot of fine tuning there that we do with the cutouts, and different things you can thicken and thin up areas of the top riser so it flexes a little bit more like the bottom, vice versa, that we go through every year. Same with the cutouts and some of that stuff in the cam as well, where you put mass and where you take it away will help the feel and the sound of the bow. The other one was just the string stop. We had a little, it was kind of like a hole in the center of our string stop, which kind of seemed like it really shouldn't matter. And it was there for manufacturing purposes only, but we found that was actually making a noise when we were shooting the bow. And so we reshaped that, just that rubber piece on the end of that rod, to make it quieter. We were able to reduce the tone of the bow by just making a subtle change there. String weights, all that stuff, it all plays into the feed, or sorry, the feel, the speed, and the sound of the bow.
Okay.
So there's a lot of little subtle things that are going on, little details that most of the time we leave out because the vast majority of people don't want to know all those little kind of those details, but there's a lot that goes in every year.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, how much do people even care about what we're talking about? You know, like, so when you get feedback from an end user, do they even care about all the details that go into these bows, or are they more concerned of, I want to shoot a bow. I shot this bow. It feels awesome. I want to buy it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, they want to pursue their passion.
Yeah.
You know, and as long as the tool or the bow or whatever is allowing them to do that, that's what they care about.
Right.
And so for us, it's our job to try to interpret that back. Okay, well, they don't know what string weights do.
Yeah.
But I do. So what does that mean to them? And, you know, there are things that we've spent an enormous amount of time and effort into that at the end of the day, the consumer doesn't even care about. They're like, I don't care. So, I mean, that's been a learning process for us through the years of speaking their language, even though we're all hunters ourselves. That's why we started all this, is because, but we didn't really think this was going to take off when we started G5 and Prime.
Yeah.
You know, our day job was making parts for other people, other industries, but we bow hunted and that's what we cared about. But, you know, you're just one person, and there's a lot of other people with a lot of other ideas and needs.
Yeah.
But generally, yeah, they don't care about why it's that way. They just want to know that this is gonna help, right?
Right.
Me get that buck or that bull or.
Gotcha. All right, so, you know, when you look at bows on paper, right, like 32-inch axle to axle, 6-inch brace height, draw weight, blah, 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 you know, weight, blah, 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 draw weight, blah, blah, blah. So when you look on these at some bows on paper, it doesn't look like much anything is changing, really,
right?
And so the speed is relatively the same. You know, there might be some gradual speed over the years that kind of comes with new design features or technology. Bows might get lighter because of, you know, a carbon riser and things like that. So what actually makes a bow better in your hand than what it does on paper every year?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've been kind of trying to tackle with. Like you said, I mean, it's been years since the speeds really changed, you know, weights, you know, when the carbon bow came out, you know, that had the ability to drastically change some of the weights. Seems like carbon bows now are the same as the aluminum bows. But I think for us, what we've been focused on was the the bow's ability to push the shaft cleanly and repeatedly, and that's where the knot travel, the horizontal and the vertical knot travel, kind of came in. And the features like our parallel cam, and now going into our core cam system, the flexing cable guard, the swerve on the riser, all that was to try to combat that. You know, how easy a bow is to tune, and those kind of things. But lately, we've been kind of going after more of how that bow aims, which it's a little harder to explain that. But as a shooting sport, that's kind of like priority number one. Like, if you can't hit what you're intending, does anything else really matter? And so that's what we've been going after with the center grip riser design and some of the other things to be able to help those aspects of our sport.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So, how do you guys judge customer feedback? Whether, you know, you put a bow in someone's hand, and how does a lay person explain to an engineer what needs to be done better or what they like? And then how do you change that?
Yeah, that's even harder to explain. I mean, it really comes down to us engineers just being around customers more, and that's
right.
It sounds so simple to everybody on the other side, but just to be able to see people struggle with something, not be able to communicate it, but you can just see they're struggling with that draw cycle, or they really don't like that how that grip feels, or they shot yesterday or last week at league really well, but today they're really struggling. I wonder why.
Yeah.
You know, it's just getting into the messy part of just having more relationships with people that use this stuff, and, you know, and then opening yourself up, not trying to be so secretive of, hey, here's a potential solution. So maybe this is part of next year's product line, but just bringing it out to the public sooner and being like, hey, try this. Does this help? No, it makes it even worse. You're like, wow, that's weird.
Yeah.
And then just,
Gotcha. The other thing that I'm always interested in knowing is I'm looking at the Revex, the new bows from the Revex series here, and you got the 32 axle to axle, the 34 axle to axle, the 36, and then you have the 32 and the 34 both have, you know, 6 1/4 inch brace heights, and then the 36 has the 6 3/4.
Correct.
How do you guys know what specs to bring to the table? And I'm going to ask another question after this, which is this trend based, or is this how these bows perform at these specs?
Well, axle-to-axle is really a... I mean, there's a couple different styles of hunting that would dictate a longer versus shorter. And then there's just geography. You know, guys where there's heavy timber aren't shooting as far as distances. Then guys out in the mountains, in the plains, where they're shooting further distance. You know, so there's styles of hunting and comforts and stuff as well. That kind of dictate the axle-to-axle. Some is jaw length. A guy with longer jaw length is going to typically shoot a longer axle-to-axle. Just the way that string presents itself to their face is more comfortable. But then the rest of the stuff, brace height, it that is really driven by speed. You know, it used to be a sin to go below 7 inches, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But that's kind of been broken. And, and then the, you know, everything else kind of follows from there.
Yeah, because I just remember, I don't know, I think we're coming out of it now, and I'm starting to see the minimum now be more in that 32 axle-to-axle range. But, you know, previously, we were getting into that 28 to 20, right. You know, even lower axle-to-axle range, and it just felt like it was an industry trend.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I think perhaps. I mean, I'm not all-knowing, but perhaps part of that reason is it seemed like the other thing that's been broken the last 10 years is that the distance. You know, when you start to take a whitetail past 20 yards, people are like, well, that's kind of a suspect. You know, maybe they had a moral or an ethical, complaint about that. But, yeah. You know, guys are... You know, the equipment and everything with rangefinders and just people's passion are there. They're just able to take longer shots more accurately than they have in the past. So I think maybe that's helped move some of this.
Yeah.
I mean, animals are still animals. So, reaction times and stuff like that. But you probably know guys yourself that, I mean, they can read the body language of that animal so well.
Yeah,
and they know that animal that they're hunting so well that they know if they're going to duck or if they're jittery or whatever. So you know, people, I think just education there as well of being able to read that animal body language to be able to know, like, hey, that deer's only 30 yards, but man, once I pull that trigger, that animal is going to be 10 feet from
right.
where I'm hitting by the time the arrow gets there.
Right.
Don't take that shot.
Right.
Or, you know, that animal is so relaxed right now. You can go ahead and stretch out and make that shot that you've been shooting behind your house 6 months straight and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a lot of confidence. So.
So I will say so this.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
As well.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
I mean, for us, part of the reason what we have, typically, the 34, 35-inch axle-to-axle has been more of our customer wheelhouse than the shorter axle-to-axle.
Gotcha.
That's the only other reason why we tend to be a little bit longer than everybody else as well.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll tell you this, Nate. I have in my head a list of bows that I have just loved throughout the years. One of them was the very first bow that I ever bought with my own money. And it's because it was such a huge jump from what I was shooting, that it was, you know, a brand new flagship bow. And in this top five of all my favorite bows throughout the year, I will say that the Prime Logic, the first year you guys brought the Logic out, was probably one of my favorite bows of all time that I've ever shot. And then, you know, you jumped up in that Logic series from there. But I love that bow. I loved what Prime, you know, I love what Prime is about. And so although last year I did not get the opportunity to shoot the single cam, I did this year. And man, you guys, it's a really good bow, man.
Yeah, we've been getting really good feedback with it. We're real happy where the product is this year. Can I ask why the logic? What was it about it that?
Yeah, I think it might have been one of the very first bows that I ever. It might have had. I think it had limb stops on it, and so.
Oh, okay.
As I drew back, my anchor was rock solid, and
right.
I just felt like I had more control over that bow, and that confidence just led to better accuracy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty common. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we're coming to the end here, so I really do appreciate you taking time out of the day to hop on and talk to us a little bit about, you know, your guys' process and the new cams that are on the RevX and all of the other stuff that we talked about today. If people want to find out more about your guys' new lineup, where do we send them?
You can just send them to g5prime.com.
Perfect, perfect. All right, Nate, well, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to do this.
Yeah, thanks, brother.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.